Aloha and welcome to Elevating Motherhood. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your host, Lori Beth Aldridge. I've taken my passion for conversation, perspective, and supporting moms and turned it into a podcast. My goal is to talk openly about motherhood, offer new ideas, and help moms find their confidence in this busy and sometimes overwhelming world we live in. We're going to dive deep, open up, and elevate motherhood. Thanks for being here with me. Let's get started. Aloha, mamas. I am super stoked to share more about the Elevating Homeschool community with you. I have created a distraction-free, off-social media, no-drama space for homeschool mamas to hang out, calm worries, and get their homeschool questions answered, all without the snark and misguidance of social media. If you've ever wanted to pick my brain about homeschool or ask me specific questions to help you work through worries on your homeschool journey, this is the space for you. I like to think of the Elevating Homeschool community as a sort of Dear Abby for homeschoolers, mixed with encouragement, conversation, and connection, not to mention homeschool discount codes, curriculum reviews, and so much more. I genuinely wish I could go out to coffee with every single one of you and chat about motherhood and our children's education, work through worries, and simply hang out. And while that's not physically possible for me to do that, we can hang out in the Elevating Homeschool community. You can ask me your homeschool and motherhood questions in that space, and I'll share as many resources and perspectives with you as possible. I want you to feel confident, resourced, and supported on your homeschool journey, and I want that support to feel personalized. I've recently answered questions in the Elevating Homeschool community about unschooling doubts and letting go of perfectionism. I've also shared very personal stories and answered many DMs. I love it over there. It's so easy to show up in a joy-filled homeschool space with other incredible homeschool mamas who are doing the good work, showing up, and are passionate about their kids' education. Join me in the Elevating Homeschool community over on Patreon at patreon.com/elevatinghomeschoolcommunity. That's patreon.com/elevatinghomeschoolcommunity. I hope to see you there. I love today's passionate and honest conversation with my in-person friend, Nikki Philippi. We're both freedom-loving homeschoolers who spend a lot of time thinking about education standards, education philosophy, and education reform. We're both lifelong learners who love to dive deep into topics that affect us as mothers and topics that affect our children's education. And then we like to discuss them over long voice memos to each other. It's pretty fun. I 10 out of 10 recommend finding another mom to like voice memo with back and forth all day. Today, you get to be part of our in-depth back and forths as we talk about education reform, protecting our freedom to homeschool, misinformation about homeschool, and our own personal education journeys. Nikki Philippi is a very popular YouTube personality, author, recipe creator, and podcaster. She's also a wife, mother, and second-generation homeschooler. Nikki is passionate, authentic, and honest in ways that inspire me. Truly, I love her honesty. If you already know Nikki, you'll love hearing her show up in classic Nikki fashion as she shares about her education journey and why homeschool is her hill to die on. And if this is your first introduction to Nikki, hold on tight because she is a ball of energy. I'll be sure to link to her YouTube channel in the show notes, as well as my recent episode with her on her YouTube channel, where we go even deeper into education reform, education freedoms, all the things. You're going to love that conversation as well. Without further ado, let's welcome the amazing Nikki Philippi to the show. Aloha, Nikki. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm so excited to be doing this with you and just excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I actually love it when my listeners get to know my
in-person, real-life friends, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know that we have a new friendship, but I adore you so much. And I think you're such a wonderful mom and a wonderful friend and just a big encourager. I like that you show up on YouTube. I like that you have a podcast. I like that you're bold and share all kinds of wisdom with people. And I love that that energy is mashing up with one of my favorite topics of homeschool, because you were homeschooled and now you are homeschooling your son. And I cannot wait to unpack this for people. But before we do that, I'd love for my audience to get to know more about you in your own words.
Oh, well, thank you for all of that. Don't mind me, I'm drinking a smoothie too, so you might hear things here and there. But like I said, thanks for having me. I interviewed you, you know, on my podcast as well. And I am so happy to get to know you in real life. Like I said on my podcast, I was fangirling from afar. I think that you're, maybe this is a dramatic word, but it's not, I guess. Your advocacy for homeschooling is something that I admire a lot. So yeah, I'm just excited to be here. I'm so glad to know you, so glad to just have this passion in common, because like I mentioned on my podcast, I don't love the phrase, but we'll say it, homeschooling is like my hill to die on. Like I'm very, very attached to that freedom, to the ability to being able to choose our own educational routes. So yeah, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about why that has become your hill to die on. And I think that the great place to start with that is your education journey, because you weren't always homeschooled, right?
No, I wasn't. So do I just dive right in?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I went to a private Christian school from kindergarten till sixth grade. And for me, pretty much my whole schooling experience, like right out of the gate, was not good. I don't actually remember ever liking school, like from the beginning. Actually, my earliest memory, this is random, was in kindergarten. I remember going into school and they were trying to teach us how to read. And I was so surprised that they didn't know how to read. I'm like, wait, we're doing what? Like spot likes to change, like whatever the, you know, simple sentence was. I was so floored that the other kids either didn't know it or we had to start from the beginning. And so that was kind of my entrance into it. I just didn't feel like I fit in super well. And from there on, I had lots of issues with different teachers, with bullying. Bullying was like a theme throughout my school experience. And you know, it's interesting side note, because as an adult now, I've worked with a counselor throughout my life, different points. And we would talk about my schooling experience. And she's like, Nikki, you're a big personality. Like I had lots of questions. I was, you know, there's 30 kids in a classroom. I probably had like the volume and personality of like 10 of those children. So I was a lot to handle. So in some ways, looking back, even though some of those teachers, if there's a way to put it, like they scarred me a little bit, I don't necessarily fault them fully, in the sense that I think it's just really hard to handle 30 kids in one room. And that's part of my, I mean, we'll get to that. That's part of my opinion in terms of like why I think homeschooling is so great. But yeah, so kindergarten to sixth grade, I had bullying experiences, issues with teachers. I was very advanced in some things and very quote unquote behind in others. So like my English and my reading was always ahead of my peers. And I always felt very like pulled back and pulled down. And then my math, I felt stupid. I could not keep up. I didn't understand what was going on. I would try so hard and I just couldn't, I just wasn't there. It was different, you know, different skills at different times. So in sixth grade, I had a teacher that was the worst. I always joke I can call her out by name because no one will ever find her because her name is so generic. Well, oh wait, no, I'm mixing up. I had a really bad second grade teacher too named Mrs. Smith, and that's always what I
was going to say. Was it Mrs. Smith?
Yeah. The sixth grade teacher, I won't call her out by name. It's a little more specific, but she was the worst. She literally, especially in this day and age, like the way you would classify it, it was like physical and mental abuse. Like she would drag me by my ear up to the front. She would do things like, in, I mentioned math being a really not a strong suit for me. I remember one day in class, this was one of my like, whoa, burned in my head moments. She had asked a math question and I knew the answer and I shot my hand up and she, you know, wouldn't call on me. And then the next question, I like brought my hand down all timidly. And then she called on me and she brought me up to the board and she wanted me to like work it out. But it felt so, it felt very bullying. Like, honestly, it didn't feel safe. It didn't feel like an adult holding my hand through it. I felt like I was being picked on. And that teacher basically ended up on my report card saying that like, I wasn't turning in my homework. And my mom said to me, she didn't believe me, basically. She's like, Nikki, watch. I'll start turning in your homework and your grades are going to magically go up, like kind of being sarcastic. And so she started turning in my homework every day when we would go. And one morning she forgot to bring it in and she came back like closer to lunch. And when she came back, she walked up to the room because they would leave their doors open with mm-hmm. the teacher having me at the front of the room, like by my ear. And my mom walks in and she's like, excuse me? And of course the teacher lets go and looks at my mom and the whole class is like staring. And my mom just tells all the kids to get out. She's like, get out, you're going to recess. And all the kids like get up and run out. The teacher and my mom like had it out in the hall. The irony was the teacher was like, I don't know what your daughter's telling you about me. And my mom's like, I'm mortified because it turns out my daughter's actually been like protecting you. Like she didn't tell me it was this bad, which was the situation. I was so embarrassed and a little bit, you know, when you're young, you're a little bit like, is this my fault? Am I making this up? Am I twisting things? So it was really powerful for her to walk in on that and then have this conversation. You know, my mom approached the principal. The principal stood by the teacher. And I remember my mom calling my dad and she had him on speakerphone. And she said, you know, I'm thinking about homeschooling her. And my dad goes, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? Like put her back if you don't like it. You know, you just try it. And I remember my mom looked at me in the rearview mirror. We were like driving to Goodwill or something, like trying to kill time because she was so flabbergasted from what she had just walked in on. And she obviously took me out of school for the rest of the day, was crying, whatever. And she looks at me in the rearview mirror and she's like, do you want to be homeschooled? And I remember just like, I mean, I can almost see the image in my mind, like where we were on the road. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And she goes, okay, let's do it. And she had been primed a little bit because she had been really reading some John Taylor Gatto. She had just read Dumbing Us Down. And I think that was really the thing combined with her literally walking in on my teacher. I mean, like I said, it's a dramatic word, but abusing me basically. That really pushed her over the edge. And so, yeah, they took me out. I mentioned to you, I'm pretty sure there's no harm in mentioning this because they can't go back and get in trouble. But 7th and 8th grade, I mean, we were basically homeschooling like illegally. We really did it mm-hmm. under the radar. And the reason for that was my mom, I remember when we first left school, one of the things she said to me was like, well, there were two things. One, she said, I'm sick of hearing you call yourself stupid. You are not stupid. And the fact that they've taught you that is like really disturbing. So she was very much like, you're not stupid. And then the other thing, which was the thing that she really highlighted and the reason why we didn't do formal school 7th and 8th grade is because she said to me, you need to learn how to like to learn again. Like mm-hmm. you need to love learning. If you don't learn how to love to learn, she's like, then you're going to be in trouble the rest of your life. Like learning is fun. And she really wanted to bring that back to life for me. And so that was the reason why there wasn't a formal curriculum in 7th and 8th grade. She pretty much would get me up like every day and give me options. Like I had to read every day, but I had a lot of freedom and choice in terms of like what I wanted to read. You know, I thought I hated history when I left school. And she was the one that really explained to me like, what are you talking about? History is people. Like you love stories. That's what history is, you know? And she really like reawakened, I guess you would say, or ignited. Is ignited a word? I think so. Mm-hmm. Just all of those feelings that I have now towards history, which is like a lot of interest. Obviously I like studying topics from different angles and whatnot. Anyways, I feel like I'm going off in the oblivion. That's kind of the start of my homeschool journey. I don't know if you want to interject or ask anything there, but.
Well, I'm going through all the gamut of emotions and I'm sure our listeners are also going through of like, I am so mad at that teacher, like shock and awe that your mom walked in on that and was able to see it with her own eyes. Not shock that the principal stood up for that teacher. And then also I want to ask your mom, like what prompted her to read Dumbing Us Down? Like where did that come from?
I actually need to ask her that because I don't know. But that is definitely what was going on. And it all kind of collided at the same time.
And I think that's how the world works. I think that's how God works and really puts everything together like that in a sequence. I mean, I have a feeling this podcast episode is going to be that for some people too, that they need to hear this. And also when I think about this, I'm thinking about it in terms of my own education too. So when you talk about that very distinct moment where you remember certain things. I have moments like that in my own education. And also when I think about my education, I went to a public school, K through 12, had perfect attendance. So embarrassing.
I remember you saying that. That's so funny.
So crazy. Yeah, but really embarrassing to walk up on the stage your senior year and be like, win the only award for perfect attendance K through 12. Oh my gosh.
I mean, that is wild. Yeah, that's so far from any award I would win. Like, yeah.
Well, I wish it's the one award I wish I didn't get.
Funny.
Well, it's like we're classified into different categories of like, I was really smart in English. I was really smart in history. I was really smart in this. I was really smart in that. Social studies, all of the things. I mean, do they even call it social studies anymore? But math was really my hard subject too. And so when I think about, you talk about how teachers are tasked with not only crowd management, which is
a
huge, massive percent of the job anyway. But then one person also trying to look at 30 individuals and say, or sometimes more than that, if it's an entire grade, right? And say, okay, this is what level you are in this subject. And now this is what level you are in this subject. And this is what level you are in this subject. Yes. And then you get plugged in. And kids are not unaware that they're either in the dumb class, the average class, like the medium class, or the advanced class. Totally. And it's just kind of understood that everyone's goal is to be in the advanced class. And if you're not in the advanced class, then you're not good enough. So I was an advanced everything except for math. And I could not get a handle on math, and specifically geometry.
Isn't that interesting?
Geometry made no sense to me. And yet I can design spaces and have symmetry and see it and recognize it and know what works together now as an adult and what it is I do and get on Canva and design things without having like a solid foundation in geometry, really.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit of a sidebar, but I remember the day that my geometry teacher in high school, I swear, who was just like kind to me because I was a pretty girl, really, like, and just friendly and cheerful and whatever. And so he was nice to me, but I remember the day he gave up on me. And I remember sitting in that class and he was like, I raised my hand. I was like, I'm sorry. I just don't get it. I don't get what it is you're saying. And he like did it one way. And then he stretched himself, I remember, and tried to describe it to me a different way. And I just went, I really don't get it. And he just stared at me like, how dumb can you be? Mm. Like, there's no other way for me to describe this. And I just remember that look and that like, ugh. And that was it. He just gave up. And it was like my individualized attention was over because I needed all this extra help and I just wasn't getting it. And no amount of help from other students or him was getting this message across to me. And I just remember thinking like, wow, they all think I'm stupid. They really do. And it was super disappointing. So I feel like we all have similar stories like this when we have, when we think about our public school or private school or brick and mortar school experiences when we're in classrooms with other teachers. I mean, when you were in school, did you ever feel like, quote unquote, getting an education or getting a quality education was the point of the teachers or the students?
Yeah. I mean, that's hard. Cause when I was in it, I mean, all I think, geez, looking back and putting myself in that time frame, no, I mean, I never even thought about it like that, right? It was just going to school. Here we go. Looking back, I think from their perspective, it was. From my perspective and what I believe now about education and how it should be tailored to each person, and they should be allowed to thrive in their strengths and take time on the areas that are a little weaker or slower. Now I don't think that. No, I look back and I'm like, oh man, that's a lot of money per month for like low key child abuse. But yeah, so no, that's the answer.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. Cause when I think back about it, it was all about social hierarchies and peer pressure and who was wearing what and who is friends with who today and super gossipy and which clique are you in and are you in a clique and are you being nice and, you know, you're striving for things like, you know, you try to become class president or whatever it is, but it's, I never felt like it was about the books and what we were actually learning. I felt like it was very peer focused. And I have started to read the book, Hold On To Your Kids, that focuses on that peer orientation. Oh, it's really, let's have a book club about that when you're done oh my gosh.
It's
interesting because I feel like there is that peer, it was peer to peer interactions and less about teachers to peers. And so I do feel like a lot of times all the lessons were obligatory. They were compulsory, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, and the nature of compulsory is that it like kind of saps the joy right out of it. So there was hardly anything at all that I was actually interested in and felt like I could show up as myself and with my interests and my angles and my views of the world. Instead, I always felt like it was me being questioned and tested as to whether or not I could just regurgitate information.
Totally. I mean, that was my entire view of history when I left, was just like, oh, I saw history as like a measuring tool of like, oh, I stink at it because I don't remember that date. My mom was like, what? You don't need to have these dates memorized. Like, sure, that's fine if they stick in your brain, you know, general timelines. But she really was like, I think that they've really been highlighting the wrong point here. Like, the point is that these are people, and that one event led to the next event, led to, like, it's all connected. And, you know, she really painted the obvious for me that somehow, you know, hundreds of dollars a month into a private school wasn't painting that picture. And yeah, sorry, sidetrack. Keep going. I just jumped over what you were saying.
No, it's great. Did you love it? Did you love homeschooling then?
So I have said to people, when my mom took me out, it was like being released from prison. And I feel a little bit bad saying that. I mean, first off, prison is no joke. That's the first thing. But second off, you know, I feel like I feel bad. Like, oh, sorry for insulting all of you. But legitimately, that's what it felt like, Lori Beth. Mm-hmm. I felt like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders when I didn't have to go back to that building anymore. Every day I would just wake up thinking, man, I feel like a prisoner. I have no choice. I have to get out of bed right now, no matter how I feel. Which, side note, I know that's a really debated thing as well when people talk about homeschoolers. One of the things that I like about homeschooling is also letting children sleep. Like,
yeah, amount of time.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not just going to let my kids sleep all day and like do whatever you want, you know, like, yeah, it's time to get up and live life. But this idea of like, no matter what, with the exception of maybe a sick day here or there, like, get out of bed and get dressed. I mean, I remember I struggled.
Go, you're late, yes. Go. Pressure. Live for the weekend, Just kidding, yes. You have too many activities. Now guess what? Now it's the Monday again. Go.
Yes, I lived a large chunk of my childhood with stomach aches every morning because I didn't know till I was homeschooled and I was able to slow down a bit that those stomach aches were literally just being brought on from having to like rush out of bed and then like rush out the door. And actually I thought that I was like very weird for that. And then I remember talking to a friend maybe like a couple of years ago, and it turned out that her sister dealt with that through all of school as well. Different outcomes. She was actually never homeschooled and she just had to deal with it all the way through. But literally through high school, she would like get up and throw up in the morning because she was just, I don't know, so tired, shocked out of her sleep.
Nauseous. Sure. I have that as a grown-up. If I wake up too early, I am nauseous for sure.
Yeah. And it's really bothersome to think that it's like kids you just have to. And there's this mentality of like, well, welcome to the real world. Like they're going to be adults one day. And I'm thinking like, we don't make them do everything that adults do. Like they're growing up. They're still little. Or maybe I said this to you on my podcast. My favorite analogy, and I think this is good across the board for homeschooling, is this idea that like, you know, when you're growing seedlings and they're little seedlings, you're not going to transplant them outside in the middle of winter or a storm or whatever. Like you wait till they're taller, till their roots have grown deeper. And at that point, it's like the wind, the rain, all of that is actually good for the plant. Like it strengthens the roots, but you know, you do it too soon, you're going to kill the plant. And so that's how I feel with a lot of just the way that kids are treated in regards to school, this like militant, get up, go, you and your perfect attendance.
Oh my gosh. Ugh, yeah. It's not perfect attendance is not life-giving. It's life-sucking. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
And you're right. And they're doing it. There's talk about compulsory preschool, can't. Like tearing the babies away from their moms. That is like absolutely the analogy that you are suggesting. Those seedlings are way too small for all of that nonsense. And it's all about, you know, they say, well, it's a funding issue or it's this or it's that, you know, and just, well, I'm sorry, but funding doesn't come before the health and the well-being of my children or anybody's children or the next generation. It just doesn't. And to give them such a sickly little start, I think they just don't. But they're like, but the argument for compulsory preschool is like, well, it's early intervention. Intervention from what? Intervention for what? It's assuming that the parents aren't giving them what it is they need.
That's
when
exactly
quite right. frankly, I feel like it's schools that aren't giving giving kids what they need.
I mean, yeah, that's how I feel. I always feel a little bit on that note too, a little bit hypocritical. I don't know if that's the right word for this, but I did not go to public school. I only did private schooling. I mean, I did some public school in high school, but it was a different situation because I took college classes in high school. That's mm-hmm. part of how I graduated early. And I actually loved the college classes on a side note, because even though I was the youngest one in the classes, and I'm positive that college students were making fun of me for being like the nerdy 14-year-old in there, it actually felt a million times better. And I didn't even really care that they were making fun of me. Actually, ironic, I took a college class with my husband's older brother back in the day. So when I first started dating my husband and I came over to his house, his brother was like, "What? You're that high schooler from my Spanish class."
Oh my gosh. So
and he totally did make fun of me. But anyways, it was way better because of things like, you know, oh, I have to pee, I can just go to the bathroom. Because mm-hmm. of things like, oh, I'm very hungry right now, I can just pull a protein bar
out
of my
bag. Have a snack in
yes,
class.
I wasn't treated like a prisoner that couldn't be trusted, which, mm-hmm. you know, once again, to their defense, like I said in the beginning, what is a teacher supposed to do with 30 kids? Like, I probably wouldn't be trusting them either. Like, your lives are in my hands. Like, no, you can't leave by yourself to go to the bathroom. But mm-hmm. I just, that kind of goes back to me thinking like, I don't, for me and my family and my general opinion, but I do stand under the umbrella of like, you know, there is no one size fits all for everyone. But in my mm-hmm. general opinion, I'm like, this doesn't seem like a great setup. Like what I just described, this idea of 30 kids, one room. No, you can't go to the bathroom because your life is in my hands. You know, just the whole thing is bizarre. Right. So sorry. What
so
were you
that
say?
Being said, first of all, you're not a hypocrite because I think that you're, I'm just going to invite you to let go of that because thanks. You were in a classroom setting and there's a yeah. huge difference between a managed classroom setting with a teacher in the front and 30 kids and homeschool. Yeah. So your comparison is totally valid. And it's so interesting because we're talking so candidly about this and how it is we actually feel about the education system and the need for reform, which we can get into a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But we're not coming down. That's yeah. not the point. The point of bringing up facts and sharing stories and how we feel and different experiences we've had and different experiences other people have shared with us over the years is the call for a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Maybe locking a teacher in a classroom with 30 students is too much. And maybe we need to revisit that instead of trying to fix what is broken yeah. and trying to say, no, 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 you have to champion this. You have to celebrate it. You have to fund it. You have to do all the things. And we're saying, actually, I think that this model is not working. Yeah. It's not working and it's time for a new model, but it would require literally a paradigm shift. And that's why I think homeschool is the biggest movement in education reform, because mm-hmm. we are honoring the individual. And there's been some confusion I've noticed online and in media sources and whatnot. But there's some confusion between like individualism and narcissism. Mm-hmm, and I mm-hmm. do think we live in a narcissistic society and that's a problem. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with the individualism because every person matters.
Yeah.
Every single person matters. And that is what focusing on the individual and honoring the individual does. It doesn't yeah. create a self-centered person or child. It creates a person who understands their purpose and yes. has a sense of self-worth and shows up to their life and their communities and their jobs and their roles in their life with confidence.
Yeah.
Instead really, of being just, you know, lumped in with everybody else.
Yeah. I was going to say something. This might be like a little too saucy of a comment, but I always think about how like the phrase in general, and I may have mentioned this to you in our interview as well. They're kind of, our conversations and our interview are kind of like mixing together in my brain.
It's good.
But that phrase, like diversity is our strength, I feel like is used a lot within like the public school way of thinking. But what's so ironic to me about that is, like I mentioned, you know, being someone who entered school and was way ahead in English and then way behind in math, it's like that makes me, I'm diverse, right? I'm ahead in this, I'm behind it, but it's not something it's not served to me to like mm-hmm. get stronger in this one area and, you know, lift up this weak area. And I think that that's the way the school system is. I don't know how there's even any getting around that. And your phrasing of like a paradigm shift, I think is the perfect way to put it, because it really is a shift in seeing what education even is. And I mean, that is really the core of why it's the hill I will die on, because I couldn't believe how much my whole world changed when I didn't have to go to this building every single day at the exact same time with, you know, a teacher who wasn't helping me in the areas I was weak in, with kids that were bullying me and the school was doing nothing about it. And I mean, like, almost movie level bullying. Like, no one was beating me up, but I would have food thrown at me, like open ketchup packets thrown at me. I had all kinds of like very inappropriate things happen that the school did nothing about. And so all of those things, I'm like, this is not the kind of education I want to give my child. Right. So yeah, you know, we're being a little like, I don't know, sassy is not the word, but yeah, we're being very open about our feelings about the school system. And I don't believe in a one thing for everyone. Right. But I do have some of these generalized feelings about schooling in general. I feel like we see schooling as one thing, and it's just not that to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, quite frankly, Nikki, that is hypocrisy. That saying we celebrate diversity and we celebrate this, but it's only their definition of diversity, and it doesn't include all kids and all skill levels and the individual at all. It's the collective diversity and not the diversity that is within individuals. So no, I don't think it's saucy. I think it's the truth. And the only way that a paradigm shift is going to happen is if we actually stand up and start speaking the truth. And I do feel like on some level, it's hard for homeschoolers, because I feel like we're going to, the ones who are saying, hey, this is what learning looks like. This is what we're doing over here. We're creating lifelong learners who actually love learning. It's almost effortless. On some days, not every day.
Some of the tech things I've had to learn lately don't feel super effortless, but go on.
So totally. Well, just the love of learning and the willingness to show up and learn new things, you know. I have that as a grown-up, and I have that as a homeschool parent. I didn't necessarily have that at the beginning of my parenting journey when I was trying to opt in to cultural messages about what motherhood was supposed to look like. For the first, you know, 6 months or so, I was really trying to like be a square peg fitting into a round hole of like, I will make this work. And then I realized it just wasn't going to work. I was like, forget it, and opted out of all the messaging and just followed my intuition and did my own thing. Yeah, and it's those of us who are doing that, who feel this sense of ease, who are teaching our children outside of a pressure cooker.
Yes.
And giving them this genuine love of learning instead of saying like, well, I have my degrees in this, and therefore I can teach my child how to love life and how to love learning.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, you do not need a degree in order to do that.
That's exactly.
In fact, sometimes I feel like my degrees are stumbling blocks, honestly, to that.
I could see that. Mm-hmm. Go on.
I start getting a little more analytical. Mm. Okay. When you switched to homeschool, I'm really curious, was there pushback from anybody in your life, family or community or the school or friends or anybody?
Okay. Well, two things. First off, my mom would say, she not a ton. Oh, sorry, my dog. I think my family's going out. So if you heard a high-pitched yip, that was my pup. My mom would say she was terrified. I don't think she got heavy pushback, but she got some like, oh. Now, we were living in a suburb right outside of Los Angeles, so there actually were quite a bit of homeschoolers, because there's a lot of kids that homeschool in LA, you know, just to do entertainment industry type stuff. Mm-hmm. So it really, I don't think it was massive pushback, but it was like, is your kid going to be dumb? Like, there was a little bit of like questioning. And I know my mom was terrified, because she did not expect us to go down that route. And there was something along those lines. Oh gosh, there was something you said earlier that I had wanted to ask you. We were talking about diversity of thought. Sorry, it was in my brain and then it floated away. It was about John Taylor Gatto. Dang it. I really had wanted to ask you or say something. Sorry, I know this is weird that I'm like pausing my story, but it's because it was something that really stuck out as to like what you said. And now it's gone.
That's okay. I'll insert a John Taylor Gatto thought that really surprised me too. Yeah. And I was thinking about it when you were talking, that in his 30 plus years of teaching, not one parent ever, not one parent ever was like, oh, my school is bad. One of the bad ones. My school is one of the ones that needs reform. My school is one of the funds that isn't serving my children. Mm-hmm. Not one parent in his decades of teaching ever said it's happening at the school that I'm involved in.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You did remind me of what I was thinking about when you started talking that. But that also spurred on a thought with Vodi Bakum. I think I mentioned him to you as well. He's a preacher and he did a series on YouTube, which if you are a believer, I highly recommend checking it out. It's a two-part series called The Children of Caesar. And he, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, the title, but he talks about that a good amount as well in the sermon or the talk. He basically says like nobody ever thinks it's their school. And then he kind of goes through and breaks some of those myths and talks about different things that have happened at private schools and all of that. But the random thing you reminded me of, and I don't remember what we were saying before, but this is what had kind of gone together. Oh, that's right. 30 kids in a classroom, peers, all the same age. One thing he said in his book that innately already felt true, but when he said it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly it. He said that when you take kids and you put them in a room with only kids their age and then one teacher, which really that teacher is supposed to be essentially their adult role model for a third of the day, he basically says that it's like, it's not fair. You're not giving kids a person to look up to. And in the past, they had, if they were more integrated into society, there are all these people they could look at and be like, oh my gosh, my Uncle Joe, like he fixes cars. That's so cool. I want to be like him. Or, oh my gosh, my Aunt Rebecca, like she does flowers for weddings. Like all these people that we could interact with. And it's not like those people disappear from your life when you go to school, but when you're spending a third of your day in this building, I mean, and that's one point
that Vodi makes from the family point blank. In the most pragmatic sense of if you are spending a third of your day away from your family, that is taking away from the family.
Yes. And that's one point that Vodi makes in the talk a lot is he breaks down the time. He's like, be real with yourself. Like the parents that will say, oh no, I'm sending my kids to school, but then we really have like devotional time. We break down what's gone on. He's like, really? And then he tries to show you like how many hours are in a day and really makes you realize that you can't compete with that level of, I mean, if you want to be really mean, we could say indoctrination, that amount of indoctrination coming into your child, however many days, 30 something hours a week, you can't compete with that. You can't, you know, anyways, side tangent, but I had really wanted to remember that because I think that's so important having like homeschoolers get that naturally. They get exposure to different ages, different adults they can look up to and admire and see what they're doing. And that was my experience as well when leaving school. Like immediately I was suddenly able to be around all kinds of other ages, different kids in the homeschooling group, the college, the co-op type thing that I was a part of. It was called concurrent enrollment where you could just enroll as a high schooler if you tested in. That was great. I was able to take more adult like artistic classes because I wasn't in school during those hours. So I could do classes when I wanted. Okay, you would ask me a question, then I diverted onto all of this. I don't remember what you asked me.
Oh, that's okay. It's totally okay. That's a logical order for things. I don't even mind at all. So needless to say, your view of education and learning changed once you started homeschooling. Yeah. Did you is there anything at all you missed about school?
Honestly, no. That's well, okay. I think the only thing I would have missed, I resupplemented myself. So it was like looking back, no, I literally didn't miss anything. So to clarify the end of that sentence, what I meant by that was I grew up a dancer and I just liked the idea of like going to prom and homecoming, winter formal. So those were the only things in my brain for whatever reason I had painted out as like a normie thing that I wanted to do. But I got to do that more than some of my other friends because I was friends with so many kids through the arts that went to public schools that I got invited to like five different proms, like four different winter formals. I went to a bunch of homecomings. So I had dresses. I went to a bunch of different dances and it was really fun, but that is the only thing through all of my school time that I always was like, oh man, if I could do that. And so I just did it. But other than that, honest to God, Lori Beth, not at all. Like if I could go back, I wish I could have been homeschooled from kindergarten on. I'm glad that I went to school because I think that, I was meant to walk this path of like being exposed to what, you know, supposedly like an upper echelon education looks like compared to homeschooling and even experiencing the bullying. You know, I remember when I left, there were some people that it was kind of a little pushback in terms of like, well, what are you going to do? Run away from bullies forever? Like, because that really was a part of it. I pretty much painted to you my school part, but the bullying was a part of it. Like I had one point in school, the short and condensed version, these girls one day were like, oh, come sit with us at lunch. And my friend was like, I can't believe they're asking you to sit with them. Like, go sit with them. So I was like, oh, okay. I wonder what they have to tell me or whatever. So I went over, sat down my tray at the table. And then I said, oh, I forgot ketchup. I was weirdly obsessed with ketchup as a kid. Got up, went back to the cafeteria, got my ketchup, came back. They had all left the table and they had dumped my tray over in the trash can right next to the table. So it was like clearly tilted over. They're all at another table. They're pointing at me. They're laughing. I froze and I sat down at the end of the table like, what do I do? What do I do? Kind of like just my brain spinning. And then all of a sudden, whack, I start getting hit with open ketchup packets. They start throwing ketchup packets at me. I get up, I run to the bathroom. I lock myself in the bathroom. I'm crying. Nobody came to find me. There was no announcement over the PA system. And I remember thinking in the bathroom, wow, people must really hate me because my parents spend a lot of money for me to go here and no one's coming to find me. And I stayed in the bathroom until the final bell rang. And then I came out of the bathroom, went and got in line. My mom picked me up. I never told my mom that day. She used to turn it into a joke. Like I couldn't eat without getting food all over me. And she's like, this is next level, Nikki. How'd you get all this ketchup all over you? And I was so embarrassed. I thought, I don't want my mom to be embarrassed by how much her kid is disliked. So I just didn't want to tell her. And anyways, point being, some people, when I left school, you know, there was that little bit of pushback. Like you can't just run away from bullies. And now as an adult, I think, yes, you can. Like yeah, you honestly, can. I'm like, yeah, you yes, can. You can. You know, I understand this concept of like, there's always going to be someone, rude people are everywhere. You can't just run away.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I get that. And anyone who knows me from the internet also knows that. Like I've stayed on here, even though I've had my fair share of internet bullying, like my fair share.
Like next level.
Like no, next level.
More than your fair share, for sure.
Yeah. So I get it that you can't just run away from mean people all the time. But also I think it's completely illogical to say like, no, anytime there's a mean person, you have to stay. It's like, dude, I know people that have quit jobs, have left jobs because the work environment was not appropriate.
Oh, I totally did. Yeah. You know, no, there's nothing that says that you have to stay in that.
That's so this idea that children have to be subjected to that, like, no, grow up, put on your big boy pants. That's it. It's like, that's so unfair to a child because we know that that wouldn't be the same if they were an adult. If they didn't want to be there, they would find a way to remove themselves. So yeah. Wow.
See, we need a paradigm shift for that reason alone right there. What are we teaching children? What are we educating them about? What is the lesson in that right there by saying that you can't run away from bullies? What part of education is that? Because that's clearly a part of education, what they think brick and mortar school education should be.
Yes.
It's clearly like a part of it. So it's not just subject learning. It's also social learning. And I quite frankly don't agree with brick and mortar hierarchical learning and the social learning and the emotional learning. And Nikki, do you want to hear the crazy part?
Yes.
Let me just take a drink of water before this.
Take your drink of water. I love that you drink out of mason jars too, by the way.
I have to. Have to.
Not everyone uses mason jars though as a cup. But anyways,
I'm from Maui. I assumed everyone did.
I like it.
You're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you, but you're going to believe it too. That's the thing. Oh, no. I was in the grocery store here one day and I had just been learning about social emotional intelligence and how the school systems are trying to teach this and how it is they're integrating this into education and they're in with counselors and different things. And oddly enough, that day I had run into a school counselor on her lunch break. And we were just chit-chatting about whatever because our kids had the same birthdays. And she was like, yeah, I'm just on my lunch break picking up this. She's like, I was like, oh, what do you do? And she told me that she was a school counselor. And I said, oh, so interesting. Have you ever heard of this like shift in social emotional education and all of this? And she goes, oh, yes. And it can't come soon enough because I feel like I spend all my day, you know, dealing with this and teaching kids this because parents just aren't doing it at home. In fact, they are so emotionally immature and socially immature that they cannot be trusted with the social and emotional health of their children. And it needs to be outsourced to the schools. And I was like, lady, we do not know each other well enough to know, like for you to, wow, no. So schools and experts and all of these people and, you know, hero And we talk a little bit about that in Hero Complex and that and how it plagues a lot of different professions that interact with children, including motherhood. Sometimes it's a little bit of a touchy subject. We'll reserve that for your podcast. But people in those roles thinking that they know better than parents. And this is the undercurrent that is happening. It's the undercurrent that is happening in education and brick and mortar education, and it needs to be stopped because it is the pathway to taking away parents' rights and saying you're too stupid, you don't know. And then I'm over here in the other realm of homeschool and encouraging mothers and elevating motherhood. And I am seeing these moms and these women who are just beat down by constantly coming up against teachers and different professionals and doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and all these different people who are saying, you don't know what you're doing. And then they're trying to come to the table, and instead of trusting their intuition and trusting their own resources and trusting their friends and generational wisdom and all of these other things that have gotten us through all of these, you know, millennia of living. Now we are not smart enough. We are incapable. We're too stupid. Mothers and I just can't help but think that a lot of these parents who feel not confident are literally products of the same system that says that they know better.
Yes, exactly. I'm like not surprised to hear your story, but it's also shocking. It's really amazing when you, I don't want to say catch people, but that's the phrasing we'll use, when you catch people in these positions, like actually vocalizing what they think.
Saying
like,
the quiet part out loud?
Yeah, you're like, oh, no, but I already knew that. I'm glad you just said it. You know, you're like, oh, thanks.
Well, social media, on Instagram, you've seen those teachers talk about it in school board meetings and actually just come out and say, and they're actually saying the quiet part out loud. And the more that they're saying the quiet part out loud, the more grateful I am that they're exposing themselves. But the more concern I have that they're just like trying to more aggressively push this current forward of parents are stupid and they don't know what's best for their kids.
Yeah, it's like really radical. And now that I'm a mom, it's kind of, I don't want to say scary, but we'll say the word scary. I just mean, I don't like to say the word scary because it's like, it seems a little like, oh, it's scary. Like the sky is falling, but it is concerning because I think it's very, very obvious the direction that it's going. And like, I don't want to have to fight for this, but it honestly feels evil. Like I know that the people that are like the counselor that you met, she literally thinks like, no, I have to support these kids. Like they're not coming from a supportive background, but from my perspective, it's literally evil for all of the reasons that we mentioned. This pushing towards everyone being in the same, everyone has to think the same, everyone has to act the same, everyone has to be at the same speed. And obviously, like we've seen, it's not even resulting in positive outcomes, you know, whether they're weighing out tests, which I think we talked about, like, I don't believe in tests necessarily. Either. Like, I understand the point for certain things. You know, my husband is a certified welding inspector and he had to take a big test. It's like, okay, fine. He's putting up buildings that could crash on people. Like, got it. But this generalization, like the SATs, the testing for supposed knowledge, I don't think that it's proven to work at this point. I don't even remember where I was going with that, but that's just not that shocking to hear your story. It's sad. Mm-hmm. It's sad.
It is. It is. And it definitely makes me feel very protective. So as a homeschooler, I feel like we don't have an obligation. That is absolutely not the word. As homeschoolers, I feel like we are a positive model for the paradigm shift that could happen and the positive outcomes of an individualized education and a loving, supportive home. And also just to dispel that myth, of course, it's not just in my home. It's with out in the community and socializing, and it's totally fine. You don't have to worry about all of that stuff. But then I also feel protective too, because I feel like once we start putting ourselves out there, and you know this better than me, putting yourselves out there, it feels like you're putting a target on your family.
I was just going to finish that sentence. Yes. Yeah.
And so it's hard to find the balance because I feel like we are called to be part of this paradigm shift and usher in this new wave of education reform, but we're also called to protect it very fiercely. So when you talked about advocacy for homeschool, 100%, I am an advocate for homeschool and I am an advocate for homeschool freedom because it is outside the confines of government expectations that the freedom to homeschool and the thriving and the love of learning actually happens.
Yeah, man. And I just think back to like little kid Nikki and like how much my world was just opened when I left school. I mean, it's funny. I felt like I became like this whole other social butterfly because in some ways I felt safe again and protected. I was with my family. I loved being with my mom. You know, I didn't have to go around these bullies that just didn't like me. I think honestly, just because I was too much. I think I was just some kids and people in general, when you're just loud and in their face, I think it's just obnoxious and I just rub them the wrong way, but I didn't have to be around them anymore. And so that felt very safe. But then at the same time, I was suddenly exposed to this like wide range of people through college classes, mm-hmm. through adult, you know, dance classes and acting classes, through our local homeschooling co-op. I felt like I suddenly just had such a wide array of people in my life versus just other like mean sixth graders, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep talking and then I just try to remember which way we want to go, like which way I want to go next. Cause I have
actually, I have one last question about your education before we move into your son's education journey. Mm. And that is, do you feel like your homeschool years prepared you for the life that you have now? Like your job, your lifestyle, your income, your marriage, relationship, trials, all the things that actually matter in your life.
Yes.
Do you feel like you got a quote unquote good education?
Yes. And I like that you used quote unquote, because when you asked me that question, when that came in the email, I'm like, well, it depends on who you ask. There's a lot of people on the internet that think I am like next level dumb. So I just want to throw it out there that I am very aware that intelligence is subjective and a lot of people think I'm stupid, but a lot of people think I'm not. And in my own personal body and lived experience, the way that you worded it is really great. I feel like my education prepared me for the life that I currently have. And that I'm so, oh my gosh, that I'm just so grateful for the ability to be self-employed. Even things like, I remember, man, I was going to say this earlier and I'd forgotten. When my mom first took me out of school, there was kind of this learning curve. I remember getting very lonely at first. And I was upstairs and I don't remember what was happening, but I was crying for some reason. And my mom came up and she was like, Nikki, here's the thing. What you're experiencing right now is what most kids experience when they leave high school, if they haven't gone to college right away. It's like they're used to showing up to the same place with the same group of people every single day. And she's like, the hard work of making friendships in that regard is already done for you. And she was like, this is great. You need to learn this. Like, reach out to people. And I remember her really holding my hand through that initial, like, how do I make friends outside of school? And I remember like one of my friends that I'm actually friends with to this day, she's a dear friend of mine, was one of the first people that my mom was like, okay, let's start thinking. She goes, okay, you go to dance class. Is there anyone from dance that you really like that you haven't gotten to hang out with yet? And I'm like, I like Michaela. And she's like, all right, go downstairs, call Michaela. I'm like, I can't just call Michaela. That's embarrassing. And she's like, yes, you can. You can call Michaela. I want you to figure out when you can go. So she like walked me through how to actually like set up a play date, which sounds really, really lame. But I'll tell you what, fast forward to when all my friends graduated high school, she was completely right. I remember I had so many friends dealing with this kind of weird situation of either feeling lonely or not even being sure how to actually stack their day. Because when suddenly someone else hasn't laid out your whole day from you, from 9 to 10, you're going to be in this class, from 10 to 10:30, you're on break, from 10:30 to, you know, when you don't have it all laid out and that's what you're used to, I think that can be, you know, a learning curve. But I went through that learning curve so much earlier just because of the situation. So that's one building block that I felt like was so crucial to even my life now, not only just general friendships and relationships, but even like my job, you know, working online, making friendships with people from all over. And then in regards to that, I guess also there's that, this idea of like figuring out what your day holds for you. I got mm-hmm. used to like planning my day out ahead of time the night before, figuring out what are the goals that I want to accomplish this week and how do I break that down through the week? How do I take little bite-sized chunks out of that? All these things that are just honestly, in my opinion, kind of hard life skills to keep that drive and that focus and figure out bite-sized things to get done. But I had to encounter them, I feel like, a lot earlier than some of my peers from like the kids that I went to school with, that I feel like it really set me up for success in that sense. Like, I felt very served by that, having to learn those mm-hmm. things early. And then obviously, like, you know, I'm not even addressing like scholastic stuff, right? But I think that's, I don't know, I'm still learning, right? Like, I'm always right. listening to history lectures and, you know, different books. So that part, mm-hmm. I don't really know how to answer. I just got exposed to a lot of education and it is what it is. But in terms of those life skills, that's really what I'm grateful for. The ability to learn, to know how to plan out a week, plan out a mm-hmm. day, how to make relationships with people, how to connect in a community. I've gotten a lot of questions over the years, like, how have you moved so many times and made friends? I haven't moved a ton, but I've moved a handful of times. And I think it's from homeschooling. Like, I know how to spot people with similar interests. And then I don't let that feeling of being embarrassed or, oh, they won't want to hang out with me, stop me. I just go, well, right. they can decide if they don't want to hang out with me, but I'm just going to put myself out there and ask. And once again, I realize that that's not education, but I think it kind of is, right? People and life and interactions, it's all part of it.
Oh, my question to you was, do you feel like it prepared you for all of the things that actually mm-hmm. matter in life?
Yeah. Truly?
And you, I'm sure you will answer. Well, I'll ask you the question. I'll assume an answer. You feel like anything you need to learn or want to learn, you can look up and use discernment to find out the source and all of that?
100%. And I know I know people who once again would disagree with me on this, but I actually think I have very good, we were talking about this in my podcast, like media literacy and like mm-hmm. research literacy. And I actually feel like in some ways, I have a better grasp on that than some of my friends who are maybe formally trained, maybe. And I don't know how to quite mm-hmm. word that. They had more of a formal education. Because I feel like sometimes when we're talking, there's blind spots they have in terms of funding. Like, that's always a yeah. big one. Like, don't you care where this funding came from? And I'm not sure, you know, they put in the time learning. I'm not sure why that doesn't seem to kind of cross the radar of some of my friends that I've spoken to. I'm not sure if it's because being homeschooled really does take you outside of that paradigm. And maybe I've been exposed to different ways of looking at media or studies or whatever than they have. But I feel like, yeah, I have a decent discernment nose. That's, can't even think for the sentence. Mm-hmm.
I think it's really good. Something you just said really struck me. You said, don't you care where this funding comes from? And I know that you're referencing media, and I immediately switched back over to education and like, don't you care where universities' fundings come from? Yeah. And then also, hello, public school, school choice, all of that. Don't you care where that funding comes from? Because whoever funds it controls it.
Yeah.
And it's really important to know that and understand that. And when you're in the system that is being controlled and being funded, I think it's really hard to break away from that and start to question that. So good. And the other thing I really took away from what it is you just said is that you learned drive over escapism. So you are in control of your day. And mm-hmm. now you are focusing on what's going to keep you motivated, what's yeah. going to make you want to wake up every single day and show up with an entrepreneurial spirit in a sense yeah. of, man, when you have this much freedom, you have to have self-discipline. You have to have drive. You have to have all kinds of characteristics that are absolutely not championed in schools.
Yes.
Not, in fact, it's like the opposite of it, I feel like. And then when your schedule is so dictated and you just want some freedom, you're not spending all of your free time saying, what can I work on for me? It's like, where can I just sit down and chill out and zone out? Because one, I'm not getting enough sleep. Two, yeah. I'm not in control of my day. Three, I'm not learning anything that it is I want to learn. Four, my schedule is so jam-packed with school and homework and sports and all of these different things that like you just want to escape it. And we yeah. have an escapism problem in our world right now too. Mm. And I think it comes from this sort of like pressure cooker, all your autonomy, all of your individual interests are taken away and put into boxes and put into a schedule and put into all of these things. And when you live and learn outside of that paradigm and in one of actual autonomy and freedom, oh my gosh, it's amazing. I mean, I have known that I've wanted to homeschool my kids from the very beginning. And I'm pretty sure you have known that when you had children, you would want to homeschool them from the very beginning. And congratulations, you were actually a second generation homeschooler then.
It's crazy. It's
amazing. You're like a unicorn.
it's wild. Sorry, we keep going. I don't want to jump in.
I think it's terribly exciting. I'd actually like to talk a little bit more about Oh, how it is you show up in your homeschool with a young son too, because I do feel like there is, as much as I'm against compulsory preschool, I do believe that learning happens all the time from birth to death, literally the entire time. And it's so funny that we like want to formalize it by putting grades and, you know, terms associated with it, but your son is learning. He is so lovely and so wonderful. When you are approaching his education, are there different homeschool styles or education philosophies that you find yourself really drawn to more than others?
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way as you, that it's birth to death. So for us, it really, we really were those corny parents that like, I mean, it's not corny, it's great, but I'm just saying it that way because it's funny. We were those corny parents that were like reading to him. Basically, I want to say from like, honestly, 1 to 2 months in, it was like, okay, reading time. And I was a little weird about it too. I'm a little more flexible with this now, but especially in the beginning, I was like, and I don't remember, and it wasn't Charlotte Mason. It was someone, I can't remember, I'm blanking on her name right now, so I don't sound like a great homeschool parent, but basically that said that kids can't tell the reality or the difference between reality and fantasy before the age of 6. So I was very much into the idea of like, okay, he only gets picture books. So he had like picture books for the first, I'd say, year and a half, 2 years of his life. I've expanded beyond that now because, you know, whatever. It's just it's an idea of philosophy. I also think every kid is different. My kid actively plays pretend. And so I'm like, okay, he knows he's got some semblance of like, he's pretending right now. He knows that that's not an ice cream cone, what he's holding. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so we started reading to him straight from the beginning. I've always felt like, and part of this is my own bias, I think, because I love English and reading and history and all of that. But I have always felt like reading is such an important component of education, because once you can do that, I feel like whatever other strengths you have can just be propped up from your ability to read. Mm-hmm. So that has been honestly our biggest focus is reading. We read to him every single day. He now has, which this is something that's kind of new within the last few months, he does quiet time for reading as well and like playing the piano. So he plays with his piano, he reads his books. I do have a preschool curriculum that I thumb through for ideas in terms of like just games to play with him, because even though I do think, you know, that John Taylor Gatto quote that there's as many ways to learn as there are thumbprints, like I do think every kid learns differently and uniquely, even though I believe that, I've liked seeing this preschool curriculum to understand like, okay, generally, what are they teaching kids when?
Sure. Age appropriateness.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So we pull games out of there. The curriculum's called Let Them Be Little, and it's as sweet as it sounds. So we do that. We also have him in the same, you know, we're in the same homeschooling co-op group, you and I. It's really a homeschool adventure group. I so love having him. It's so fun. And all the moms in that group, I feel like are similar-ish. I mean, we're all homeschoolers, so of course we're similar-ish. So I love that. In terms of
passionate and capable, I would describe.
Yes. Yes. And I love, I mean, all the moms and all the kids in our group, on a side note, every week I come home and I'm like, oh man, I'm so grateful. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so as far as homeschooling styles that I like, you and I are very similar. Of course, I vibe with the whole unschooling idea just because I like the idea of someone following their interests. Mm-hmm. Even still, on a side note, that's not a side note, but like when I'm tackling a project or, well, pretty much all of my work, this has honestly been my method for the last, like, I don't even know, 6, 7 years. When I am feeling stuck, like, I don't want to do anything. I don't know what I want to do. There's kind of this internal conversation that goes on. It's like, Nikki, just do anything and do what you feel like doing. And I notice that following my interest in my to-do list usually loops me back in and then has me going deep. And so I kind of feel that way with kids in education as well. Like, what do you like? What are you drawn towards? And then they can kind of go deeper from there. So yeah, unschooling, like you said, Charlotte Mason. I'm blanking on the other one. We just talked about this in our last interview. It's the one that the family you were working for, they were
Waldorf,
using that.
Waldorf.
Waldorf. I like the Waldorf stuff as well. I like Montessori influence in some ways. I like the idea of kids learning how to handle like bigger tasks. But I really, honestly, I just expose myself to a lot of these this type of content and these philosophies. And I kind of pick and choose what I like from it. But I will say at this point, because my son is only 3, if I didn't say that in this message, if anyone's like, what? He's only 3. So for me, it really is just like life skills, reading. And as I've said, like my plan for his whole homeschooling experience is to follow his interests and equip him. So it's like, okay, what is he like? You know, I consider myself, I said this in our interview as well, like the ultimate guidance counselor. Like, I am really invested in his education. I want to see him go all the way through. It's like, what does that mean? What things do I want to teach him? Can I teach him? What things does my husband want to teach him? What can my husband teach him? What things does our community have to offer that aligns with his interests? And I really feel like that's one of my top jobs as a mom, is to kind of sniff out and notice, like, what is he enjoying? What is he gravitating towards? What do his strengths tend to be? Because I think oftentimes people's strengths and their interests can kind of, you know, they're kind of the same sometimes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know if any of that gave any clarity. Okay, good. Cause sorry, what were you gonna say?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel a lot of maybe it's naive, but I feel a lot of confidence in our homeschooling journey. Like, I think my mom was terrified. And I think because I'm the product of it and I don't feel like I'm, you know, flopped on my face and don't know anything, like, because of that, I feel a lot of confidence. And because I had the firsthand experience of knowing what it felt like to come out of school and experience that, there's no guessing. Like, my mom was just hoping and guessing and researching and assuming. And it's like, oh, I hope my kid doesn't turn out to be dumb, you know? But I feel like, okay, not only did I make it out, but you made my life a lot better. So I notice sometimes in talking to other homeschooling parents, and like I said, I hope it doesn't prove to be like naivete in 15, 20 years. But sometimes when I talk to other homeschool parents, I will feel a little more panic from them, or like, what about this curriculum, or what about that? Right. And not that they can't be, because I also stand by, and this is what I think is the beauty of homeschooling, every kid and every family is so unique and different. There are engineers in the world. There are artists in the world. There are chefs in the world. And I think families can sometimes share similar talents and leanings. And so I do think every family should have the right to choose what makes sense for their family. Like, I have a friend who, they love classical conversations. I see the value in that. I don't foresee us going into that, but I see the value in it. But that being said, I say all that to loop back to, like, I don't feel that freaked out about the whole like curriculum idea, or is my kid going to be dumb? Just because I see that he is like a never ending, like, he has a never ending appetite to want to know things. So I'm just like, all right. I mean, as long as we don't give up and we all just keep learning and walking through life together, like, I not only think he's going to be fine, but I think he's going to be thriving in life and be an incredible young man one day. So, and then an old man one day.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah. All the things. Well, I love that so very much. And I wrote down all kinds of things because I feel like we're on the cusp of some sort of new education model, if you will, that has to do with modeling. And us modeling as mothers an interest in learning, an interest in life, showing up, investing in our family, nurturing our family. This is an excellent education philosophy. I feel like moms showing up and being invested in their children's education and modeling reading and lifelong learning and really solidifying strong family values and helping form communities and then encouraging our children in their community involvement. And when I hear you say pursuing our own interests, a lot of people say, well, what if the mom isn't an engineer and, you know, she doesn't expose them to that because the child doesn't even know that that exists. I do think one of the responsibilities we have as parents is to lay out a feast, you know, in a very Charlotte Mason way. So it's interesting because I think that people lose that thought when they hear like, oh, you should only study what you're interested in. Well, that's where the amazing role of the mother and the parents come in. And we lay a feast and say, here is all of this over here. You can study any of this. Does this sound interesting to you? I'm going to dive into this a little bit and share what it is I learned. There's so many different ways that we can encourage that liking of learning and encourage a desire to study different topics and all the topics we're quote unquote supposed to expose our children to. That happens in homeschooling. That happens in the Charlotte Mason method. That happens in unschooling.
And totally.
All of the different education philosophies. It doesn't have to happen in just a classical brick and mortar school education for sure.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any concerns about homeschooling your son?
Okay, two things. First off, I did want to say you spurred a thought off of what you just said, and then I'll loop back to that. I mentioned in our group chat the other day that I've been obsessed with this app called Scribd that I really hope isn't hurting any writers or isn't illegal or anything. It's still up on the app store. It's like $12 a month, whatever. Anyways, unlimited book downloads, podcasts, all of that. And I always think about, you know, this idea of following your passion and just being a never-ending learner when I'm on this app, because what I find happens, and this is what I think can happen with kids, obviously, too, is I'll be reading one book and they'll mention something or another author, or it's like a little breadcrumb they drop. And I'm like, ooh. And then I go back and I look that up. And then all of a sudden, I'm onto a whole other book or series of books or potentially even topic. That happens all the time, too. I'll be in one topic and someone will mention something. And somehow they connect. But by following, so when we were talking about following the interest, sometimes it leads me to a completely different topic. And also, just to echo everything you said, I do think that it's our responsibility to not only equip them with the tools that they need because they're kids and they can't get a hold of everything. Like, okay, here you go. Here's what you need for that. But also, like you said, to provide them with a feast. You know, that woman from Harvard, I can't remember her name, Elizabeth something.
Elizabeth Bartholet.
Yeah. So one of the things, her main things that I noticed in her paper was criticizing that we want to keep our kids just insular and sheltered into just Christianity. And it's funny because my husband and I have talked about this a lot. It's like, well, of course, we want to live a life centered around Christ and we want to teach him the morals that we feel like are true and correct. But we want to expose him to the fact that people believe all kinds of other things. And even the idea that it's like, hey, I mean, we've even told him this now. Sometimes we talk to him like he's a little adult. We're like, hey, this is what we believe. This is the conclusion we've come to. Not everybody believes this. And so that's really what it is we want to expose them, but we want to hold their hand while he's walking through it. You know, you're safe. You can learn this. So yeah, it's funny when I saw her say that, I'm like, wow, we're not planning on just shutting him down. Like, oh, this is it. Everybody believes in Jesus. You know, like that's not the situation. And that was the first thing when you said that I wanted to circle back around. And if I'm being totally honest, Lori Beth, to your question, I would say the main concern I have, and this is not even the question you were really asking, but this is the truth, is really just that they're going to try to take away the right to homeschool. I just don't really have that concern, at least at this point. Like I said, hopefully it's not naivete, but I don't really have that concern that my son's not going to be okay, because I just think, like, barring unforeseen circumstances, it's like, man, I'm here. I'm caring for my husband, who's a totally different personality, by the way. He is that engineer-minded, math-minded person. He's here. My parents are next door. Our community is thriving. Like, I just don't have worries for him in terms of his education, but I do get a little worried in terms of, like, where the country is going. We talked about that on my podcast. I legitimately think they're coming hard for it. Like, I think there are people that aggressively think that this is child abuse and they're not going to stop fighting. And so that's honestly my biggest concern, is I want the freedom to care for and educate my son and live with him in his childhood and enjoy his childhood. And I do get worried sometimes that they're going to come down hard on it. Yeah,
I agree. I actually share the same concern. Every once in a while, I'll have a day where it kind of creeps in of like, oh, am I doing enough? Am I doing the right thing? Oh, yeah. Is this, you know, that kind of stuff creeps in. But truly, at this point, my biggest concern is that, yeah, that homeschool is going to be regulated at a federal level or even outlawed. And there are people out there who are saying the quiet parts out loud and their thoughts out loud, and they're sharing those notions. So it doesn't come out of nowhere. And it's definitely not an unfounded concern at all. Do you have people in your life, and like, people in your life is pretty broad. It's family and friends and then also strangers on the internet.
Yeah,
it's a unique mix of people. Yeah. When they're coming to you, do they share any concerns about homeschooling?
Only strangers on the internet. So in real life, no. I have so many homeschool friends. I don't know. Maybe the friends that I know that don't homeschool aren't aggressive enough to tell me their concerns. I don't know. But no, nobody's come at me in real life. I think part of it is also his age. I think a lot of people don't even realize, or it doesn't even cross their mind, that I'm like homeschooling my son. It's like, he's three. But that is like I said, 100% the direction we're going unless God makes it very clear for some other reason. I only say that because I am never someone that will say never, you know, mm-hmm. but that's what I feel, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
I understand. So,
yeah, no, nobody's really coming at us at this point, except for on the internet occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, like, you know, there's a lot of myths about homeschool, like they're not socialized or they're weird or it's like moms and jumpers at home. Like, it's just all the strange things, including everything from that Elizabeth Bartlett article that I'm just going to go ahead and link to in the show notes because it's important people know.
Yeah.
Are there myths and concerns from when you were homeschooled that you see carrying over into now?
Like myths that other people have?
Yeah. About
Totally. It's exactly the same. Like the socialization one is the same thing as back then. My mom used to have this joke. I don't even know if it's true. She goes, the weird homeschoolers didn't become weird when they were homeschooled. They were homeschooled because they were weird. So that was always her joke. It's a little mean. But yeah, I think that what that speaks to really is just this thing of like, no, like I was still socialized. You know, my kid is still socialized all the time. I'm not even fully sure what that means. I mean, I think so much of this idea of socialization falls in alignment with this also like, how do I word this in a way that makes sense? Like post-industrial revolution, centralized empirical way of thinking. It's like, mm-hmm. what about when like cities were way smaller? What about, you know, I watched Poldark a few years ago and I remember mm-hmm. when I was watching it, or I watched like the first season. I don't think I watched past the first season, but I remember when I watched the first season, it's like back in the 1700s, something like that, when they would go to town to the grocery store. It wasn't the grocery store. It was like the market. It was like, oh, it's market day. It's like a huge deal for them to go to market day. And I'm not trying to bring us back into the 1700s. I get it. We live in modern times. But something has changed that it's like we think it's socialization to remove our child from the house every 5 days a week for most of the day. And if they don't do that, then they're not properly socialized. I just think like, man, society has shifted a lot, especially here in the States, right? In the last like couple hundred years. So that was the main thing. And that just doesn't resonate with me because I don't even know what being socialized means at this point. Like, what is that? Just socialize with your own age group? Does that mean mm-hmm. they've hung out with someone else today? Like, what does that mean? Like, my kid's not home alone by himself, not talking to anyone. I don't know. You get what I mean. I think it's a very bizarre, what's the word you used? Like stereotype. It's a very bizarre mm-hmm. stereotype. And I don't quite know why that's there.
Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly. I was kind of getting that vibe too. I just wanted to hear it from somebody else that all the stereotypes are still the same from forever ago. And I think it's because of lack of exposure, honestly.
Yeah.
Lack of socialization with homeschoolers or the philosophies of it and the beauty of it, because it's just not what people do. It's again, turning that blind eye to the need for change, you know, and saying, well, schools need to change, but you know, there's nothing wrong with my school. It's really just like opening your eyes and widening your lens and taking a look at homeschool and seeing it for what it actually is. And I think that if education reform is going to happen, it has to be based on what homeschool actually is and not the crazy stereotypes that just don't hold true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I just keep thinking again about how, like, if anyone is listening and is a Christian and hasn't heard that Vodi Bakum two-part video series, I really can't recommend it enough because he not only comes at it from like a practical, it's kind of like an apologetics for homeschooling video, mm-hmm. honestly, because he talks about it very logically and breaks down like hours in the day versus how much time you have at home, you know, sleep, extracurricular, all of that. But then he also approaches it from, you know, his understanding of a biblical perspective and why he thinks that it is a very good thing to do to keep your kids close, and why he believes there is a biblical call to keep an eye on your children basically all day, every day, like morning to night. Mm-hmm. Not literally. There are people that I will trust my kid with, but it's like, that's also part of it too, is like the vetting. And I think not mm-hmm. to go off on a whole separate tangent, but it's like, man, am I really going to send my kid to a building where it's like, oh, don't worry, we've background checked them. It's like, what do I know these people? Do I even know the person that ran the background mm-hmm. check? Like, what is this background check? Oh, also it's a government background check. Mm-hmm. Oh, also I know of police officers that have murdered people and they've been background checked up the wazoo. And mm-hmm. I realize that's not to add this element, like whatever, you can't control everything. I'm not trying to add a scare element to it. We can't keep them perfectly, whatever, but just like what you said, this idea of, oh, not my school. It's like, right. Ah.
I know.
Can you be so confident in that?
Right. And, you know, there is no vetting if a parent is kept outside the classroom. Just yesterday, I had a conversation with a friend who was told that if her son is enrolled in this public school classroom, that she is not allowed to go in because it would be too disruptive to him. And that she's only allowed to go in to see what the room looks like after hours when no children are in there.
And you know what's wild?
Yeah, no.
Is they're probably right. It probably would be disruptive. And that's the whole point as to why I'm like, not my system. I'm not putting my kid in the system where it's like, I can't even check in on him, or I'm disrupting and ruining the whole flow of everything. Like, not my vibe.
Full circle. Your mother technically disrupted that classroom when she walked in and learned the truth and disrupted your life in the best
way. Wow. Mm-hmm. I just got chills. I just got another round of chills. That's exactly. Truly, Lori Beth, I am so grateful to my parents. It almost makes me want to cry because my life changed so dramatically when they took me out. I told you this, other than my exposure to like God and who Christ, who Jesus was and is, other than that, I am not grateful. Like, there's nothing else I'm more grateful for in my upbringing than them taking me out of school. They like saved me. I hated it. I really, really hated it. And I didn't realize how much I hated it till I got out. And my whole mind and spirit and personality like just was refreshed. That's a beautiful kind of closing circle of everything.
I love that so much.
Not that I'm trying to end you, but it sounded like the perfect
whatever. It's good. It's good. There it is. Done. Oh my gosh. It's so good. And your story is so poignant and it needs to be shared and people need to hear it. Parents need to hear it. Kids need to hear it. So that we don't feel like we're crazy and are thinking that something needs to change. All of us have this nagging notion, something needs to change, something needs improved. Yeah. And it is in individuals taking action and doing what's best for their family and aligning their family's values with their action. Yes. And that includes, and especially includes, their child's education. And when you do that, when you align your values with your actions, especially with your child's education, you change entire generations. Yes. And you are now right at the beginning of that next generation and that change. And I think it's so awesome. Nikki, you're so awesome. I know my listeners are going to want to connect with you more. Where can they find you?
Well, they can search for my name all over the internet. It's the same everywhere, just Nikki Philippi. And I just really appreciate you elevating, just like your title says, elevating my story, because, you know, there is a smidge of like, not embarrassment, but like when you asked me, oh, do you think you had a good education? And knowing that there's always people that are like, no, she's so stupid. So it feels a little bit vulnerable even to talk about it, but it genuinely feels like the right thing to do because this is my truth. My life was radically changed. And I so firmly, strongly believe in the ideas that we talked about and the fact that education does not equal the system that we have right now. And so the fact that, or it doesn't have to solely equal that system. So the fact that you've brought me on and you've, encouraged me to tell my story. It means a lot. Your support means a lot because I agree with you. I think it is really important for these stories to get out there because I think they're coming down hard. And even though it can be scary and it's like, am I smart enough to speak up? I don't know. Are they going to just, you know, attack me because I've stuck my head up and said this? But it just feels like what they're pushing for is so wrong. And so I appreciate you bringing me on here and allowing me to share. Thank you.
Well, honesty is the only way that we can find real solutions, right? We can't bring a half-truth problem to the table and get a full-truth resolution to it. We have to bring our full truth to the table in order to know what we're actually dealing with and find the actual solution for it. So thank you for being real with us. Thank you for being vulnerable and honest. Nikki, I appreciate you so much.
I appreciate you too, Lori Beth. And I'm so glad that we know each other.
Me too. That's it for this episode of Elevating Motherhood. Thanks again for spending your valuable time with me today. I hope you found some insight and inspiration, or maybe a little of both. If you like today's show, please leave a review on iTunes. I use your feedback to plan future shows and cover topics that serve you. You can also connect with me on Instagram and Facebook. Links to those accounts are in the show notes. For more information, including today's show notes, head to elevatingmotherhood.com. That's elevatingmotherhood.com. Thanks again, Mama. I appreciate you.